So hey everybody, welcome back. Welcome to 2024. This is the first podcast for 2024, season 5. I can't believe we've been doing them for 5 years of nothing but Western history, Wild West history, a little Civil War thrown in there, some Donner Pass discussions. Well, we've got it all, and we've got more coming at you in 2024, including, for starting off, woohoo! Starting off 2024, season 5, we have David DeHaas. And David DeHaas is coming back for a part 2 about Tombstone, the Arizona Mystique. You can go and listen to that podcast in the archives on December 17th, 2023. We interviewed David about his new book and his partnership with Don Chappett. And he's got this book out. Now it's out through Caxton Press. You can buy it at Amazon for $31.95. And it's available now. Go get it, buy it, and learn about Tombstone, the Arizona Mystique, and all the little cool things around Cochise County and Tombstone and the Mystique of Tombstone in Arizona. It's a huge book. You want to get it. You're going to want to make it part of your like your reference library. Like for me, my reference library for Wyatt Earp is Anthology, Wyatt Earp Anthology, and you're going to want to add this to it as a reference guide for coming back. And, oh, what is about this? What is about that? I remember reading about this. You're going to open up Mystique and be like, there it is. So we have David back. The reason that we actually brought him back is when we did the podcast, we ran out of time. We didn't even talk about the cover. But before we get into that, we want to thank our friends at the Wild West History Association at wildwesthistory.org. I urge you to become a member. And we have Roundup 2024 coming up in Fort Smith, Arkansas. I just a couple of weeks ago went through Fort Smith for a second time, and you're going to want to come to the Roundup because it's a beautiful town. There is so much history, and the downtown is just fantastic. You make this turn, you come off the freeway, and you drive into town, and it's just, it opens up into a whole town around the fort and Fort Smith. So we hope to see you at Fort Smith, Arkansas for Roundup 2024, and you can find out more information at wildwesthistory.org. And we want to thank our friends over at Tombstone Epitaph, Eric and Mark at tombstoneepitaph.com. We urge you to subscribe by going again to tombstoneepitaph.com. It's a newspaper delivered right to your door with hard-hitting, factual, and deep research history in a newspaper. So if you can take it to the doctors, you can take it to the airport, you can take it on a travel with you, you can read it in bed. I love a newspaper. I don't know about you guys, but I love a newspaper. And there's just all sorts of stuff going on at the Tombstone Epitaph. By subscribing and becoming a subscriber and get it delivered to your door by going to tombstoneepitaph.com. So like I said, we had David on our December 17th our podcast right before the end of the year. He's kicking off January. He's kicking off 2024 as the first podcast. Welcome, sir. How are you? Welcome back.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, I'm so glad we get to do a part two because I just knew we weren't going to be able to fit everything in one episode, and I started talking real fast. They're trying to squeeze everything in, and it's nice to be able to have another go at it with you to kind of finish things off.
Well, we talked in the pre-interview for today, and you mentioned that there were some things that you wanted to clarify or correct. What were they? What are some of the things that we spoke about the first time that you're like, maybe we got it wrong, or maybe we didn't add enough information?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a few points that maybe we can make as we talk, go along. But a couple things I wanted to mention. When we were talking about how Don and I worked together and whatever, it didn't kind of come out quite the way I meant when I listened to it again. Don's an amazing researcher, and he's been to all the museums and sites, and he's done tons of research at the Arizona Historical Society, at the Cochise Recorder's Office, the archives there. And so I didn't mean to say that he was like bedridden and at home all the time. Just the last year or so, he hasn't been able to get around a whole lot. And so, I'm able to do that. And the point I was really trying to make is that for the last 35 years, my family vacations with my family, we've done road trips across the United States and to WWHA meetings like you just discussed. And along the way, we stopped at every historical site and every, you know, museum. And I've held things, and I, you know, we've been at Gonzales, and I've held the cannon that started, led the come and take it cannon. You can touch it. And I've touched the cannon that started the whole, you know, events that led to the battle at the Alamo. And even at the Alamo, one of the cannons there is one that was fired that they show in the movies where Santa Ana was off in the distance. So I think the point I was trying to make is that, you know, I've been around and I've been able to kind of get around and do things with the kids early on. And, you know, last couple of years, Don hasn't been able to get out a whole lot, but he's done all that stuff too. And he's, for his books, the Doc Goodfellow book and Cochise County Stalwarts and Nellie Cashman and Bert Alford, you know, he's done a ton of field work himself. But more now, the last couple of years when we've worked on our books, I do a little more of that field work stuff, as he's not able to get around as well. But, you know, he did the groundwork that led to, you know, the beginnings of this book, like we talked to in the first episode. So I didn't want to make, I kind of came off like, I was out running around everywhere doing everything, and that's absolutely not. We're, you know, an equal partnership. We work together, and we, it's kind of a democratic thing. And, so that was one point that, also just a couple other things. And some
hold
of the
on
points,
a second.
You know,
hold
I may.
Hold on a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I want the listener to know a little bit more about Don, because like you said, he in the beginning of his career, he was out in the field doing stuff, and he was creating and writing groundbreaking work during his period. One of the books that I urge everyone to get is about Virgil Earp. His book is called Virgil Earp, Western Peace Officer by Don Chappett. You can buy it on Amazon. I got it on Amazon. It is definitely worth the read, because the information in that book is groundbreaking. So many people focus on Wyatt Earp, or they focus on the OK Corral. You know, Peter Brand focuses a lot of his material on the books about the people and the backstories. But Don wrote this book about Virgil Earp. And I urge just go on Amazon or go on a bookseller or somewhere and find it. Again, it's called Virgil Earp, Western Peace Officer by Don Chappett. I have it. I've read it. Just go get his books, because you'll find out so information. And the way he writes is so easily understood. Lots of pictures in it, lots of information. I've never met him. But the way he writes, it makes me love him. So go out and get his content, get his books.
Agreed. Yeah, I believe you. That's the seminal book on Virgil Earp. And he's got others, the Doc Goodfellow book, the Bert Alford, like I said, Nellie Cashman. The Bible, you know, when you're researching anything relating to Earps and Tombstone, is Cochise County Stalwarts, which he co-authored with Lynn Bailey. And he's done some amazing stuff, so I didn't quite mean it to come off the way it sounded. I kind of assumed everybody knew that already. And,
okay.
You know, this Virgil Earp book was written like 30 years ago, so it's a little dated now. There's been a lot more found since then, and Don himself has found a lot more. In fact, some of what he found led to our first book, the Earps Invade Southern California. There's some events that went down because he had authored the Virgil Earp book that led to some findings that got us going on that book. So yeah, you got anybody into Earpiana has to read that book. That's a must.
So what else then, moving forward, that was in the original interview that we did in December 17th, the things that you want to clarify, was there anything additional?
Yeah, just a couple other things, and I'll probably think of more as we go along, but we went through, you've asked me the question, I think it was one of your first questions, of important things were in the book that weren't anywhere else. And a lot of most of those things were, but there are a few things that sound like I may be taking credit for that, you know, other researchers had worked on before and we just kind of expanded on. And, a good example is, you know, on Thomas Gardner, the guy who co-founded the LA Times, it's a really cool fact, and we talk about that and put it in perspective. But that's been out there before. Don did work on that in Cochise County Stalwart's book, a biography on him, and that was 25 years ago that came out. So the book is not the first place that's ever been out there. And then also regarding like the Crystal Palace, you know, it's when you look at the timeline and everything, it becomes very obvious that Virgil and Wyatt were never in the Crystal Palace. But when we started this journey, we were over a year into writing the book, about 2 years ago, I started, when we were at the point where we were getting something that was looking like a book, I started to put the manuscript out to a lot of historians in the field and to friends and historians, and I wanted their comment. And then some of those who made comments, we actually had them later write praise for the book that went in the book, and that kind of worked out really, really well because we got their input, and then we got some great comments back. But when you do that with the friends, you have to kind of present the book ahead of time. That's a lot of work taking on that project, like John Bosenecker did, and you know all the work he put in and the months he put into really analyzing everything. But a couple of facts that we put out there about the Crystal Palace and Thomas Garner. I had asked every one of these people, and this is well documented. I have emails and paper trail of all this, but I pretty much told everybody, all the historians at the beginning, I asked the question, do you think Wyatt Earp and the Earps were ever in the Crystal Palace? And it's kind of funny, really, and I'm not trying to brag, or, you know, I had the same thing. I thought too, because there's a song about Wyatt Earp and Virgil being in the Crystal Palace, and there's I mean, it's everywhere. And so you always kind of assume it's true until proven otherwise. And all these people, these are top researchers in Tombstone. You know, I'm not going to name names, but some of the bigger names in the field. And every one of them said, yeah, Wyatt Earp and Virgil were in the Crystal Palace. And when I told them, well, no, they weren't, some of them argued with me. No, they were. They were in the Crystal Palace. I said, look, it comes clear when you look at our timeline, you can see that the Crystal Palace wasn't there when Wyatt Earp and Virgil were in town. Now, unfortunately, some of that leaked out onto the internet, but as far as I know, we were the first ones to ever make that association. Now, I don't want to take credit for all that, because actually Lee Silva and others, but Lee Silva especially in his book 15 years ago, is volume 2, parsed that out really well. He really went into the different iterations of the Crystal Palace and what was there when and that kind of thing. So yeah, a lot of what we wrote found was based on that. But I was really shocked how many people, and I don't know if I ask you right now, did you ever know that before, that they were, like I said, somebody's been putting it out on the internet since that point, since I told them about it. But if I had asked you 2 years ago, would you say that Wyatt Earp and Virgil Earp were in the Crystal Palace at one time?
Well, I'd have to say I don't know.
Okay, well, it's hard to say. Yeah, go back. But without fail, everybody said, you know, they were there. And like I said, that's what's so cool about our timeline and whatever. It makes it plainly obvious that they never could have been there. So, again, I don't want to take credit for all that, because Lee Silva did a lot of research 15 years ago. And same with the Thomas Gardner. Don Shopwood did the original search on that in Cochise County Stalwarts. So I didn't want to make it sound like we were the... But that association, as far as I know, the dates have been pointed out, but no one's come out and brought that point forward, as far as I know, before. And I interviewed some well-known researchers in the field, and they universally said they didn't know that. So I don't know. I just wanted to clarify those points. So there's a few others, too, that as we talk, they'll come to mind, and I'll bring them up if they come up.
All right. So if you're wondering who we're talking to, we're talking to David DeHaas, has written a book called Tombstone, Arizona Mystique. He wrote the book with Don Chaput. It's available on Amazon for $31.95. It's published through Caxton Press. You want to get this one and add this one to your library and learn more about the little things about Tombstone that you may not know in Cochise County. When we spoke last time, we had in this first pre-interview from December 17th, there was lots of discussion about the cover and the cover art. Now, before you tell the deep about the cover art, because it is unlike any other book, I want to start off with the original conceptual discussion. What was the discussion about it? Did you have it in mind what you wanted on the artwork, or the person who did the artwork, did you give them direction and they just went off with it? Like, talk about the original conceptual part of it, the artwork. Like, what happened? How did that come about?
Yeah. Oh, okay. With our first book, the last book, the artwork, that just kind of hit me right away. I knew exactly what I wanted, and I just kind of started to put it to paper, and that went so smoothly. And I was really worried about the second one, this one that we're talking about now, the Mystique, that wouldn't happen again. But it really did. I had a basic idea of what we wanted. And then it just started to kind of take off from there, and it just turned out so amazing. I think this is the best dust jacket I've ever seen on any book. And the artist, Gary Zavoli, is amazing. We knew we wanted him. He did our first book. And I had a good idea, and I sent I talked to Gary on the phone. We talked, I think, for an hour plus initially, because I wanted to make sure it was doable. It was our first dust jacket. I didn't think it was possible to do what he did. I couldn't imagine fitting all the stuff in. And same with this. And so we talked on the phone, and I remember telling him, and he, agreed too. I had so many things I wanted to fit in there, and I didn't want it to become too busy with all, and, I don't know if you remember, I think it's the Sgt. Pepper's Beatles album, and I even mentioned it to them. There's I can't remember if it's on the cover or inside the album, there's these group of famous people throughout history, and it's kind of cool, but it's kind of really busy. It's hard to concentrate. There's so many different faces, and it's really cool, but I didn't want that. It's kind of a fine line between fitting all the stuff. There's so much stuff I wanted on here, and obviously we couldn't fit it all. And there was a special order it had to be in, and obviously we had to take some liberties. So, I essentially told him what I wanted. I sent him photos of all the people I wanted. I sent photos of all the scenarios. The main concept, he grasped it pretty right away. And then I let him, there's obviously some artistic license. I mean, he did some amazing things with this, and I don't think it turned out too busy, but, when you first look at it, you might be a little overwhelmed, but this is a really important dust jacket as far as the book goes, because essentially it tells the whole story. If you look at it right and know what you're looking at, the story of the book is kind of told in the dust jacket art. And to answer your question fully, I told him what I wanted and how I wanted it and sent him all the photos and all the scenarios, and then I, let him take his artistic license. And he's such an amazing, brilliant artist, just brilliant. One of the examples is the background is it like a, I think it's called a midnight blue or a black blue, and I initially wanted purple because I wanted it to be mysterious, kind of purple and whatever. And he wrote back to me, said, I don't think you want purple. It's going to look like it's a carnival kind of thing. And he was so right on that. And I said, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to defer to you. I want it to be mysterious. I want it to be ominous kind of looking. And if you're looking at the painting, it's it's a midnight blue, black blue in the background, the sky and the clouds and the tornado and lightning. And it's kind of an ominous, mystical look to it.
But the book cover itself is not like a normal cover. Like, you've got a front cover and then you've got the back, and you actually have to open it up, and it's like one giant mural. It's normally on the back would be a picture of you, your face, you and Don, and there'd be maybe some quotes from other authors that said, this is a must read, this is a must have, whatever it is, right? The artwork actually starts in the back cover. So when you open it up and then it goes across the front. Was that because you had so much that you wanted put into the art that it became this giant mural when you open it up all the way? Was that the original concept, or was it going to just be a front cover?
No, No, that was the original concept. The problem is it's a painting. This is commissioned painting that specifically was Zoboli. Like I said, I don't know how much you know about him, but he's such an amazing artist. And he's done some great book covers, book dust jackets through the year. In fact, it's a little kind of funny story how I first kind of got into him years ago. This is like 30 years ago. Mary and I, you know, we're shopping books. I always go in every old bookstore in every historic town and every, and I think we were at I don't know if it's a Wola or Nola meeting or something. And Mary came with some books and she said, I want these. I was buying books and I already had a huge stack. And I said, well, why do you want those? They're about Billy the Kid. I said, why do you want those books? And he goes, well, I like the dust jacket. I like the painting, the cover, and I want to just take off the cover. And she didn't want the books. She wanted the dust jacket. One of them's Gunsmoke in Lincoln County by Phil Rash, and the other one is Warriors of Lincoln County by Rash. And he did the artwork for both those, but especially the Gunsmoke one. And she just wanted to take off the dust jacket and frame it. It was so beautiful. And I remember saying to myself afterwards, and it was, and we bought the books. In fact, I probably have five copies of each of them now. But that was... And it's the same thing. If you open the dust jacket on that book, it's a painting. It's front and back. You have to open the whole thing. And I remember saying to myself that guy is just so amazing. I love what it is. I don't know if you know that book or if you've seen it. If not, no. You should. And he's got all the characters of the Lincoln County War in there. And all the faces are so cool. Billy the Kid and McSween and Tunstall and Dolan and Murphy and all the characters. He got it all in there, and they're in Lincoln. They're in Lincoln there on the street, Main Street in Lincoln. And I always said, gosh, one day if I ever write a book, that's never going to happen. But I'm going to have him as my artist. I want to have him. And this is 25 years ago, whenever the book came out. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was writing a book. I knew right from the beginning it was going to be Zoboli doing it. And that was our first book. And then he did such an amazing job. I still remember when our publisher first saw that, the publisher of our first book, because he wasn't really sure how that was going to work out. He said, you know, normally people just put a photograph on the front and whatever. This was a big undertaking. In fact, this painting took Gary like 7 months to, six, 7 months to complete, because, you know, he had to do it in stages, so complicated. And it almost, at one point, it was almost going to delay the publishing of the book. We're waiting for the painting. But this is a full painting. So it had to kind of go this way. It wasn't just going to be the front. So it starts in the right bottom corner and it moves up to the left top, and we can talk about that later. But no, it was always designed. And if you look at that book, if you have it in your library, go look at it after we talk. Gunsmoke in Lincoln County, it's the same thing. It's a painting. It's such a cool painting. It goes around to the back. So it would have, because it's a painting, you know, it's shaped, you couldn't just fit it on the front cover. You have to kind of, well, the front cover stands alone the way we designed it. He designed it that way, so they could stand alone, because people are only going to see the front cover in a bookstore. But when you open the book, and I have the original painting now. I haven't. I just finally got it framed and it's hanging, so proud of that, with our other dust jacket. And it's hanging in our living room and hallway, the original painting. It was designed to do that. It was designed as a painting. And to fold around the book.
Mm. So is there any chance that painting may go to print and you may sell like limited editions so that we can frame it and have it ourselves, or no?
Funny you should ask.
Huh.
You know, that's exactly what I have, the original painting. Yes. And we plan to make posters, and we did that for our first book. Our first book, we made up posters, and we have some numbered ones. One of them's hanging in our house, whatever's number one. But number two is hanging in the Birdcage Theater. If you go in, I don't know if you've been there lately, but in the Birdcage Theater, they sell our first book. And hopefully they'll sell our second one too. But they're selling, and they have a painting number two. So we have several that are numbered, and they're all signed by Don, both Don and I. I have a number of those that we do plan one day to sell. I've just been so busy, I haven't even taken the time. But we do have printed up posters, and they're beautiful posters. And we will do the same with this book, too. In fact, we've already contacted a printer. We will have printed posters and stickers and note cards. Like, we did that with our first book, too.
Wow. No, it was just kind of a mistake. I asked that question, and I was like, I didn't know that you were actually thinking about doing that.
No, no, that's a great question. And when I see you next time I see you, I'll give you one. But, yes, no, we did plan to do that. It turned out so well. So we do have, like I said, it's really cool. Next time you're in the Birdcage, check their, the books out front right next to the cash register. But if you go in their back, you know, they have a bookshop in back too.
Right.
And the posters hanging on the wall there, are signed poster number two of, I think we had 100 printed up. And very two cool. of 100 is there with our books. And
okay. When the artwork was being done, though, you probably had to have seen, and I could be wrong, usually am, you could have seen like an initial, and you said, wow, that's amazing, but we need to add more. Did you have to add more? Because like you said, it tells a story on the artwork. It tells a story. Was it sometime, did you come back to it and say, listen, I want more things added? Because when you see it, it's got a spider, a tarantula, and there's a tornado, and there's a guy, and there's this, and there's that. And it's all pushed together to create a story. Were things added and removed? Or was this the initial print was so good you just left it alone?
No, yeah, there was definitely a back and forth. In fact, one of the cool things is I also have his original pencil drawing. Because before he went too far, you know, he did a pencil, pen and ink drawing. And, of course, he wanted to make sure we liked it. He didn't want to put 6 months into it and then say we hated it. So there was a lot of back and forth. And I did plan to print out the original pencil drawing. Is really cool, too.
Oh,
and I do, I have the rights to the painting, whatever. So, yeah, I do plan to print out some thing. We did that with our first book. We made a limited edition series, and we print in the front of the book, we put the original pencil drawing. So, yes, yeah, there were a lot of things. Like, a good example, right in the dust jacket on the front cover, front part, the right side, you can see the Apache kid. Now, that was originally, I think he had Mickey Free there. And Mickey Free, you know, Apache Indian Mickey Free. And he is in the book a little bit, but I had him change it to the Apache Kid because Apache Kid really has a little bigger role. There's an incident that involved him and plays a bigger role in the book. So we put him in. Yeah, there were a lot of little things like, you know, like I said, I wanted the scorpion. And when we get him in, I'm sure we'll go through the description. I'll describe it all, why they're there. But I definitely wanted the rattlesnake, the tarantula, the scorpion. The scorpion we had to add in later. He didn't initially put that, but I wanted that in there. Yeah, so there was back and forth for sure on this. This was, like I said, a 6-month process, something like 6-7 month process back and forth. And, you know, he does a lot of other things too. So he was doing that while he was doing paintings for other people at the same time. So, but we definitely had to do a lot of back and forth. And I sent him like 60 different figures and scenarios I wanted in there. And, you know, he told me there's no way we could fit all that again. Then it's going to look like Sergeant Pepper's there. And, you know, it's going to be really, really busy. So, you know, I kind of bowed to his artistic license. And he put in as many as he could. Another thing you mentioned, that is a good thing, because we did have blurbs from various reviewers of the book to put on the back. And a little short things, a real nice one from John Bosenecker, whatever. He wrote the foreword. I told you that before.
Right.
He wrote a really long foreword. But we had outtakes, you know, from him and several other people who reviewed the book. And the book designer, you know, the book goes at the end to a designer. And she just felt that if we did that, if we tried to squeeze those in, it would kind of block the paint, some important things in the painting, like the birdcage in the left upper. And the El Dorado program there is really an important thing. That's the original 1929 from my collection, original program from the original 1929. She just thought it would get too busy. So we had to take the little blurb things off, which I really hated doing because there were some really nice things said by a lot of people who reviewed the book. And I wanted to include at least a few of them there, but we couldn't.
Gotcha. Well, we're talking to David DeHaas. He's written a book called Tombstone Arizona Mystique. It's available at Amazon and booksellers near you. On Amazon, it sells for $31.95. It's published by Caxton Press, and I urge you to get this one. He's been talking a little bit about the first interview. We did the first interview is in the archives back on December 17th, 2023. You want to go back to listen to that one. We talk about his book, Arizona Mystique. Today we're talking about the artwork and some corrections and things that maybe we missed or we didn't talk enough about. Your first book was The Erps Invade Southern California, correct?
Correct, yes.
And that book is out, and that is, just as a reminder, tell us a little bit about that book. We didn't talk about it on your on the December 17th interview, but we've referenced it quite a bit in this podcast. Tell us a little bit about the first book.
Yeah, well, that was called The Erps Invade Southern California, and it tells a story that hadn't been told before about how the Earp brothers met up one last time. The Earp family, you know, they were a clan. They stuck together everywhere they went. They followed each other from, you know, Pella, Iowa, and Kansas, and Prescott, Arizona, and to San Bernardino, California. But this is a particular episode that kind of got missed in history, and I think most people thought, and I know I originally did too, that there was not a lot there. And then all of a sudden we started to find out that, you know, there is a lot there, and not only about the Earps meeting up in Sawtell, California, which is right next to where UCLA is today. Beautiful area, you know, multi-million dollar homes all around Westwood and Beverly Hills and Century City and Malibu, Santa Monica, Brentwood, some of the richest areas in the real estate in the world. And then to think that the Earp family, you know, you think of them as being in the Wild West, and here they are in Sawtell, California. And it essentially tells the story how for about 10 years at the first decade of the 20th century, the Earp family was pretty much all together. And we've actually found a few other cool things since the book came out. It turns out there were other family members there in Sawtell that we didn't even realize, that they were all out, kind of out there together. And Newton Earp's daughter, we didn't have that in the initial book, but she was living in Sawtell at that time. And like I said, we found some cool stuff. So if there ever is a second edition, I don't know if that'll happen. I'm pretty sure there'll be a second printing, because I think the first run is almost gone last time I talked to our publisher. But I don't know if the second edition, we have a lot of cool stuff we can add to it. But anyway, it just tells how the Earp brothers, Virgil, Wyatt, not so much Wyatt, but he was there, and James Earp, Newton Earp, the other brother, half-brother, and Nicholas were all together. Newton and Nicholas were living in the old soldiers' home there in Sawtell, which is a home for disabled soldiers after the Civil War was built there. And they all kind of congregated there for nearly 10 years. And the other thing that really made it interesting and, it gave more information to make it into a book is that not only that, so many other friends from Tombstone were there from the original Tombstone years, you know, the early 1880s, our era one in the new book, John Clum and George Parsons and Thomas Fitch and Hunziger and Herring, the attorneys, and the Hooker family, and Gerd, Dick Gerd, and all these people. What's his name? Lou Rickabaugh, who owned the concession at the Oriental Saloon. All these people were hanging out together after they left Tombstone, ended up together in West Los Angeles and Sawtell at the same time. So it's a cool story. And then Don and I also wrote an article to expand on it further that was published in Wild West magazine a few years ago, and it was called The Earp Fellow Sophisticates. And we talked about all the fellow sophisticates of the Earps who all ended up kind of together in that area. It kind of expanded on what the book was in a book.
Very cool. If you were talking, I'm gonna promote another book that's out there that you didn't write. But Garner Polinsky, if you want another book about the Earps after Tombstone, there is a podcast deep in the archive from a few years back. Garner and I talk about Wyatt Earp. He wrote a book called Wyatt Earp in San Diego, Life After Tombstone. And a lot of people don't know that the Earps spent a lot of time down in San Diego. In some cases, I think they were there for the building of Hotel Del, the Hotel in Del Mar. They were there for selling property, buying and selling property on Coronado Island. Like, it's just, there's so much that goes on in Earpania. And one of them is Garner's book, Garner Polinsky. I urge you to get that one too. Wyatt Earp in San Diego, Life After Tombstone. So that's a shout out to Garner.
Yeah, that, I agree. It's a great book. And Garner was a good friend of Lee Silva's too. And yes, he's been a good friend of mine for years. And he had the same publisher, Graphic Publishers, published that book. Same publisher that published Lee Silva's volumes 1 and 2.
Well, there's even a foreword in the back from Lee Silva. And, you know, definitely is very cool. And Ben Trawick. Actually, the foreword was written by Ben Trawick. So, you know, just a really great book to add to your Wyatt Earp collection. In regards to your book that you've written, Tombstone, Arizona Mystique, you covered stuff that was outside of Tombstone. We didn't talk about this in the pre-interview, so I hope, you know, I'm going to put you in any weird spot. But there's a lot that happened outside of Tombstone in Cochise County. A lot of history involving in regards. Is there anything that you can share? We got about 20 minutes left. Is there anything you can share about what on some cool things that happened in Cochise County away from Tombstone?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. We didn't try to focus on that too much, but there's a lot of things like that happened in Prescott.
Well, there you go.
There's Tombstone's Era 3, well, in Era 2, you know, Tombstone, the mines are failing, and Tombstone is goes into a Baraska, into a bad time. So a lot of the people, people in Tombstone who would run things started to move over to Prescott, and the mines there in Prescott, and did well. And then when Tombstone hit rock bottom, they all saw that Gage, E.B. Gage and Staunton and these people, they saw that, hey, they could buy up all these old mines for nothing. And they slowly went in at the end of Era 2, off the record. They were sneaking, kind of sneaking around, buying up all the old Tombstone mines. Oh, wow. And then what they did is they sold, I think it was the Congress mine in Prescott that did so well for them. And they made a lot of money on that. They sold that, and they used the money to start to buy up Tombstone again. And this is in the late 1890s, early 1900. And this is what led to Era number 3 in our book, is now all of a sudden they realize, hey, this is a good time. We'll buy up all the mines. We'll get them for nothing. And with modern technology, we can get the water out of the mines and get them running again. And that's exactly what they did. They, for a few years, bought up everything, and then all of a sudden they made the announcement they're coming back. And E.B. Gage led that charge, and that led to Tombstone's Era number 3, the second bonanza. And between 1900 and 1910, Tombstone made a big comeback. And again, that's all in the book, and that's
right. Well, that's outside of Tombstone.
Okay, go ahead.
That's outside of Tombstone. That's cool. It's all part of that Arizona mystique. That's very cool.
Let me just tell you one more thing. As long as you brought that, this is kind of more Tombstone, but this is like a really cool thing that wanted to mention to you. In 1879 in Tombstone, Artemus Fay started the first newspaper in Tombstone, the Weekly Nugget, and the printing press that he used turned out to be the first printing press in Arizona from 1850s. This dates all the way back to 1850s. And this is really cool. The printing press initially was in Tubac, right after the Gadsden purchase in Tubac. And in fact, in our timeline, I hope maybe if we have time to talk about that a little more, we kind of date the beginning of all and everything that happened in Tombstone to the Gadsden purchase. Mm-hmm. You can see how the series of events, and we show it in our timeline, everything started happening because of that in the 1850s, really led to everything that happened afterwards. But that printing press, which was the first printing press in Arizona, then it came up to Tombstone and was used for the Weekly Nugget. And that press still exists today in, it's in Tubac today in their museum there. And I told you how I've touched the cannon that, from Gonzales, the Come and Take It cannon, mm-hmm. that started the right. Alamo, that led to the Alamo fight, if you know the history there.
Yep.
Well, I've touched this press too, and this press is so cool. From the 1850, the first press in, first newspaper in Arizona to ever be published. It first was published in Tubac, and then a month or two later went up to Tucson, and there's a lot of great history and famous names that were involved with that. But then it worked its way to Tombstone, and now it's in the museum there. And so when you're talking about things outside of Tombstone, this is a cool thing. If you're ever down in Tubac, over near Tumacacori, down in southern Arizona near the border, I don't know if you've ever been there. If you haven't, you have to go. Such an amazing place.
Well,
but that printing, mm-hmm. 1850s printing press is still there. You can still see it. You can touch it.
Well, if you go on my YouTube channel, on my Cochise County _ travels YouTube channel,
yes.
We did a video about the printing press, and I think it's still in operation. They don't print with it, but I think it's there, and they have a display over at Tubac at the museum.
They don't print with it, but yeah. So you've seen that too.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk about, I think that's really cool, and we talk about that in the book too. Again, we emphasize that point. I don't know if very many people really know about that.
I didn't know that.
The press is still there, and you can, and that was the original press, and how the press got to Tubac first place is a whole story, and how they had to ship it around. And that's kind of it's a typical example of all the cool stuff that's in our book. Little tidbits that I think this book is going to have more stuff that people have never seen or heard before about Tombstone in any prior book or any forthcoming book.
Okay.
There's so many facts in here that just really cool facts about Tombstone's history.
Well, we just got a couple of minutes. So is there anything else that you want to clarify? Anything else you want to clarify to make sure we're all good? David's all good. We're got everything cleared up.
Okay, if I have a minute or two, maybe I just describe real quick the dust jacket, then just
sure.
really what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, if you want, I don't want to make this too boring. So,
no.
But I just like to let people know that who buy the book that take a good look at the dust jacket, and it takes some thinking. And actually put this out on my Wild West Collectors Facebook page. I let people kind of guess, and some people got really, really close to getting exactly what's happening here. But essentially, you have to look at it from the right lower corner is where the beginning of time for Tombstone. There's Ed Shefflin, and he's dressed up, he's got his miner's clothes underneath, but he's wearing like a wizard's costume. And if you look in his left hand, he's holding silver. And this is the point of his first discovery of silver in the Tombstone Hills. And you can see behind him, every single thing in the dust jacket is important. If you look over his head, you can see the hills there. And he was out in the Tombstone Hills there. There's cactus next to him. And he's holding a miner's pick. And at the moment he finds his first, you can see he's kind of grinning and amazed and happy. He found silver. And you can see his miner's pick is in the air, and there's lightning coming off the pick and a tornado starting. And it's a tornado of time that extends from the bottom right corner to the top left corner. And I know we're not going to have time for it, so I'm not going to go into detail everything that's going along. But time is passing from right to left upper. And in the left upper corner of the dust jacket is modern day. And time is passing, and you can keep seeing it works its way to modern day. And there's the visitor center there that used to be the bank. But in the top corner, there's a group of people standing in front of the Birdcage Theater. And that represents January 2024, modern day. And the group of people there, you may know a lot of them. If you look in the top corner, there's, first of all, the Birdcage. And there's Bill and Paula Jean Hunley kind of coming over. And there's a group of people shaking hands. And that's me shaking hands with Ben Trawick. We've been friends for 30-ish years now. In between us are our wives, Mary DeHaas and Mary Trawick, and they've been good friends for 30 years. We've gone out to eat together and ate countless meals at their home. Mary has cooked for us. They're in between, kind of looking on as Ben and I shake hands. And then right behind Ben is Don Chaput, and again, the Birdcage Theater. And then if you look real carefully, and I'll finish off with this real quick, there's a a car there, an SUV, and that's our old blue Suburban. You see the front of it and the back of it behind Paula Jean as she comes to join us with Bill Hunley. And we've all been friends. We've been friends. The Hunleys, great friends with them. You know, we'd go to WWHA with them all the time and do stuff together. But that's our old Suburban. We used to call it our Tombstone Mobile. And we bought the car specifically for our trips to Tombstone because the kids in our other car, you know, they were all squished together in the backseat. The minute we pulled out of the driveway, they're all hitting each other and fighting like kids do. And in this car, they each had their own row. And we wanted in the paint. This is one of the things that kind of hurt the most to take out, but we had to when talking to this boy. I wanted in the car to have the kids kind of hanging out the window, kind of shouting at us and stuff, all three of our kids. And then our license plate on the car, you can't really see it there, but that's our Tombstone Mobile that we took to Tombstone all the time and met up with the Hunleys and the Trewicks. And so that real quickly is the best jacket. I mean, we'd have to spend 30 minutes to go over in detail. There's Boot Hill is there. If you look right below, there's a coyote howling and shuffling. Next to him is his burro and his mule. And Boot Hill is right there with the rattlesnake, the tarantula, the skeleton, and the coyote. And so I won't go over all the detail, but if you have a time when we're together, I'll talk to you about it more and tell you what's going on.
Okay. Well, we're talking to David DeHaas, along with his friend Don Chappett, who's written a book called Tombstone, Arizona Mystique. It's available on Amazon and booksellers for $31.95. It's published by Caxton Press. You can find out more about David in our first podcast about the book was December 17th, 2023. Of course, we want to thank our friends at the Wild West History Association at wildwesthistory.org, my second family. And we urge you to join and become a member so we can see you out at Fort Smith and get the journal. We have a new journal. We have a new publisher for the journal, so can't wait to see the next journal coming out to see the changes that are going to be made, along with a new design, hopefully a new look. I mean, the journal is probably one of the top reasons for joining the Wild West History Association because it's actually like a Bible, a mini book that shows up on a quarterly basis, so you're going to want to check that out. And our friends at Tombstone Epitaph, Mark and Eric, putting out a fabulous paper about Tombstone and Wild West history in a paper format. And I urge you to subscribe and get that delivered right to your door by going to tombstoneepitaph.com. Of course, you can find these podcasts everywhere on iTunes, iHeart, Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you want. It is an educational, it's rated as an educational podcast with a clean rating, so you don't have to worry about any swear words or anything out there that's vulgar or crazy. What's going on in today won't show up, so you're okay to listen to it with your family. And then, and again, I want to thank everybody for making this just a terrific podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or what's going on, I have a Facebook page and an Instagram page at Cochise County _ travels. That's Cochise County _ travels. You can find my Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. There's some stuff out there and on YouTube with videos of my travels and where I'm going, what I'm doing. And you can also find the Wild West History Association on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube at Wild West History Association. Urge you, there's some great bugs on the windshield videos coming out by Pam Potter and Eric. They're just doing great content. And then Dave Guyton is over taking care of the Instagram page. So there's Western history coming at you from all sides and in different formats. So we definitely want you to get involved. As always, I appreciate you guys a bunch. Thanks for listening. Until next time, safe travels, and we'll see you soon.